regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Going to be spending some time with John Comerford, NRA ILA Executive Director, talking about primarily the new lawsuit filed in Maryland. Honestly, I mean, it was one of those cases we've seen a couple of this recently, where the lawsuit filed before the ink is even dry on the governor's signature of an anti-gun bill, the challenge to Virginia's ban on so-called assault firearms and large capacity magazines. That lawsuit, multiple lawsuits filed, I think within 5 minutes of the announcement that the governor had signed those bills into law. Same thing in Maryland, where Governor Wes Moore signed a bill this week that will ban the sale of Glock handguns, other striker-fired handguns with cruciform trigger bars. Going forward, these items will not be available for sale in the state of Maryland. We've seen similar legislation adopted in California. It's under consideration and will probably become law very soon in New York and Connecticut. Governor Ned Lamont signing a similar legislation on Wednesday, day after Governor Wes Moore did the same in Maryland on Tuesday. So this is part of a concerted effort. You know, in addition to the laws, we also have lawsuits that have been filed. Mayor of Chicago, Mayor of Baltimore, I think the city manager in Seattle. There may be a couple of others out there as well. And again, seeking to halt the sale of some of the most popular handguns in the country because criminals are illegally converting them to fire full auto. And so rather than go after the criminals, we're going after the gun maker. We're telling lawful gun owners, you can't have these items. Unless you're law enforcement, of course, right? Because because law enforcement is exempt from all of these bans in Maryland, in California, in New York. Yeah. Not that, you know, police have never had firearms stolen, right? No, never, ever. Yeah, yeah. It's, again, the point here is not to stop the police from having firearms. The gun control lobby would never do such a thing. They're the only ones, frankly, that the gun control lobby is happy allowing to have firearms. It's about you and I. It's about banning commonly owned firearms. It's about trying to do an end run around the Heller decision. And it's about opening the door to other bans. The ban on Glock is bad enough because it is one of the most popular handguns in the country. Whatever, you know, model you're talking about, the Glock brand is one of the most popular in the country. But it doesn't stop there. If they can get away with doing this with Glock, they're going to look to do this with as many other types of firearms as they possibly can. Which is why, one of the reasons why, this new litigation is so important. Take a look and a listen. John, thanks so much for coming to the program. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And the legal team has been busy this week. Boy, a number of lawsuits filed, but I want to talk about what's going on in both Maryland and Connecticut, where we have seen these bills to ban the sale of Glock and other striker-fired handguns going forward. The NRA has already sued over Maryland's law that Governor Wes Moore signed on, I think it was Tuesday, right? I mean, you guys sued within minutes along with your partners in that case.
Yeah, we were ready to go with our friends at Second Amendment Foundation and Firearms Policy Coalition. And look, in Connecticut and Maryland and what we've seen in California and even in New York on these so-called Glock bans, it's the stereotypical blue state governor who is attacking law-abiding citizens for the acts of criminals. We're not focused on prosecuting gangbangers and criminals in blue cities that are crime-ridden who illegally convert these commonly owned semi-automatic pistols into illegal machine guns. But no, we're just going to ban wholesale one of the most popular models of semi-automatic pistol in the nation because of the acts of those very criminals. It's their playbook. It's been their playbook for decades now, and it's going to be their playbook in the future, and that's why we got our lawsuit out, because really the only way to teach them a lesson with the makeup of these states is to remind them what the Constitution says and have the courts defend that Constitution.
Yeah, because it doesn't stop here either. I mean, if you look at what the gun control lobby has been doing, in civil litigation. They've argued that AR-15s and other modern sporting rifles are readily converted to machine guns, right? This is essentially the same argument they're making against Glock, that, well, because you can illegally convert them to fire full auto, that there's a problem with the firearms as they're designed, as they are manufactured, and as they are sold. So if they can get away with doing this with Glocks and other striker-fired pistols, this is exactly what they're going to try to do to ban AR-15s and other semi-automatic rifles.
Look at it this way. I mean, the left uses marketing terms, and we've seen this time and time again, right? Assault weapon, ghost gun. Then it was the Glock switch. And then I believe truly these governors just want to use these terms at their pulpit while they stand up there at the dais and preach about how we should be living our lives, how we shouldn't have firearms. They just don't like the way Second Amendment supporters and freedom supporters live their lives and defend themselves and their families with the firearm of their choice. So they stand up there and they portray these terms. But let's go back to the courts really quick. Mm-hmm. You know, I see some frustration in the comments across, various forums and social media from gun owners related to inaction from the courts. And I share in that frustration. We just saw the Duncan case, which is NRA's case out of California, was relisted again. We've seen the denial of cert time and time again on hardware cases. But you have to keep going and you have to keep filing these cases. And this is why it's so important to protect the Senate firewall this fall, because two more years of confirmed judges can make a heck of a lot of difference when it comes to restoring our freedoms. Look what happened in the Third Circuit with gaining a conservative majority in the unique move that they made on the hardware case, and then gaining another vote, theoretically, because we don't know until we know, the day before the oral arguments on Bonk. So while there can be frustrations with SCOTUS, we don't actually know what their exact formula is that they look for, because those doors are closed. Even though I would love to be a fly on the wall, we could save a lot of money by knowing exactly what they want to hear. But you know, the chances are there. We have to keep going, and we'll even take the circuit court wins. So that's why you don't know what'll happen in the Fourth Circuit, in the Third Circuit, in the Second Circuit. You have to keep confirming those judges and changing the majorities on those courts in the interest of freedom. And that's how we'll ultimately win and send a message to governors like Lamont and Westmore and Newsom and others.
Will NRA be filing suit in Connecticut? I know that you guys have already launched a lawsuit in against Maryland's Glock ban, but will you be doing the same in Connecticut?
We're looking at Connecticut. We're looking at New York as well. I mean, I think sometimes folks fail to understand that ultimately the goal here is to get these to the Supreme Court. So you have case law that is precedent nationwide, not just in a circuit or in a district. So a case from Maryland, if it goes to the Supreme Court, will have the same impact as a case from the First Circuit or the Third or the Second Circuit or Third, et cetera. So, but we are looking at it right now. You know, I think the lawyers from our team, from SAF, from FPC and others, I mean, these guys have calloused fingers from typing up as many lawsuits as they've been working on, because we're seeing the blue states entrench themselves in this anti-freedom, anti-constitution activity. And we see the red states expanding to the maximum level of freedom. So it's this big divide that we've seen nationwide on a variety of issues. But in the end, it's not going to get fixed until the courts make that decision.
Yeah, well, and you know, and to that end, I mean, let's quickly talk about another case that was filed this week challenging the ban on carrying in postal facilities. NRA teaming up with the Gun Owners of America, Gun Owners Foundation. And what's interesting is there's already litigation. We have a good decision from a district court judge, and the Trump administration decided not to appeal that decision. But as you say, we don't see nationwide injunctions issued anymore. So you can get a good decision at the district court level, even at the appellate court level. But it's going to apply typically to those named plaintiffs, maybe the institutional plaintiffs, right? So if you're an NRA member, you'd be protected. But in order to get these things, these victories to apply nationwide, ultimately you do need the Supreme Court to step in. Is that one of the reasons why, even despite a victory in a previous case and in another circuit, you're challenging the ban on carrying in post offices in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, you need to have a broader ruling that impacts everyone. You know, look, we saw that out of the Tenth Circuit with our case in New Mexico, where waiting periods were struck down. But that's just applying in the Tenth Circuit at this point. So we continue the fight on waiting periods because we need to beat those down nationwide. No one should be subject to a time tax on a constitutional right. And you shouldn't be banned from defending yourself just because you go into a post office. So it's this, it's the same thing. And, you know, but I think it's a great example to show, you know, the viewers and listeners out here and the readers that there's a huge volume of Second Amendment cases being filed. I mean, the pace at which cases are being filed now is unprecedented in our lifetimes related to this issue, partially due to our work in the Bruin case, making this possible and showing us the way to argue these cases going forward. But mainly it's due to the fact that the gun groups are working together, whether that's GOA or SAF or FPC or others. You know, we're working together, which is really increasing the volume on what is possible in terms of these Second Amendment challenges. And that's going to continue. So governors are now facing multiple lawsuits from different groups, or they're facing a really thought out single lawsuit. And that allows four groups to file four separate lawsuits in different areas instead of four of the exact same lawsuit. So you still see some of those legacy items in the Third Circuit where we were combined. You know, NRA's the lead case there, but we're combined with other good cases. And the same thing in the Seventh. Those are those legacy cases. But going forward, the volume has really stepped up, and the lawyers are doing a great job because all of us are working together. And that's really, everyone has the Second Amendment at heart, and it's the best thing that we can do and keep moving forward.
Yeah, I love to see that coalition building. And I am I'm pleased, again, as you say, that it allows for you know, more strategic litigation all across the country. And that is going to benefit gun owners in the end. John, as always, man, appreciate you joining me on the program. I know you got a busy day ahead of you, but always appreciate the chance to touch base and look forward to talking again in the very near future.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
My thanks once again to John for joining me on the program. And thank you as well to Second Amendment Foundation, Firearms Policy Coalition, Gun Owners of America, Gun Owners Foundation, Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep Your Arms. You know, I meant it when I said I love to see this coalition building taking place. And it is fantastic to see these Second Amendment groups working together in a way that really we haven't seen in recent years. And I hope that this continues. Looking forward to having the folks from GOA, SAF, and FPC on the program in the near future. And not to leave out the National Association for Gun Rights, they're doing some great work as well. All right, let's get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Las Vegas. Now, this is, I guess, not a true recidivist report. I don't believe that this individual has a previous criminal history, but it is still a what the heck are you thinking story. Teen accused of planning Las Vegas mass shooting faces probation. Well, that'll teach him. That'll teach him. According to the Las Vegas Review-Journal, a teen accused of planning a mass shooting to, quote, kill all normies at a Las Vegas Valley library or school could receive probation under a negotiation with prosecutors. 18-year-old Vincent Lamas must set up inpatient mental health treatment before he is sentenced, a judge ruled on Wednesday. District Judge Mary Kay Holthus agreed that Lamas had otherwise complied with conditions of the plea deal hammered out by Chief Deputy District Attorney Eckley Keach and Defense Attorney Frank Kumu. The judge said, keep doing what you're doing for now. We're trying to figure it out to keep you in line with the deal, and told Lamas to report back to court on June the 10th. Lamas has been out of custody on electronic monitoring for several months, which is, again, we've talked about the issues of electronic monitoring before. In March, he pleaded guilty to threatening to cause bodily harm or death to a pupil or school employee, conspiracy to commit assault with a deadly weapon, and battery constituting domestic violence. If he does not complete treatment, he faces up to a year in jail. He has to avoid 3D printers. He has to give up all firearms. He has to stay away from the College of Southern Nevada High School. According to court records, the teen, who's depression and anxiety, has experienced a suicidal ideation and emotional distress since he was in middle school. He was arrested back in February. after a relative signed a notebook in which he had written about wanting to attack a library during a kids club. He allegedly named 8 targets and stated, "I'm doing it today, the massacre." He had also purchased a crossbow, an axe, a hunting knife, and other weapons from Amazon. When he pleaded guilty, he agreed to undergo a risk assessment evaluating factors such as past violence, access to weapons, untreated mental illness. Lamas, in the evaluation, reported growing up without a father. At age 13, watching his mother die of cancer, for which he blamed himself. He said that he had been bullied, mocked, physically attacked by his peers who had called him a school shooter. You know, I feel for this young man. I really do. My own youngest kids having lost their mom to cancer, not at 13, but not much older than that. Growing up without a dad. You know, there are some similarities to the Parkland shooter in that regard, right? At the very least, you can say an unstable home life. Add in the depression, the anxiety, the tormenting by peers. As I said, I feel bad for the kid. The young man, excuse me, he's 18 years old. He's not a kid. And I hope that this inpatient mental health treatment will be helpful to him. I am concerned, however, that if it is not, that if Lamas is not really interested in getting help and in getting better, that the sentence that has been imposed, which again essentially is nothing more than probation, is just going to be seen as an invitation to do harm. That even the criminal justice system, even prosecutors, did not treat him as seriously as he needed to be treated. Again, I hope that that's not the case. I have no influence on this plea deal. But I am concerned about the message that this sends, not only to Lamas, but honestly about the message that it sends to others out there who may be thinking about doing the same thing. So we'll keep our eyes on this story. We'll let you know any updates there out of Las Vegas. Today's Armed Citizen story from, I believe this is Memphis, Tennessee. Indeed it is, North Memphis, where a homeowner fired shots at a burglar who broke into his house the other day. I'm not going to comment on the mugshot just because, I mean, look at me. I'm no supermodel either, but you make your comments if you want. According to WREG in Memphis, the alleged burglar, 33-year-old Simeon Pratcher, has now been charged with aggravated burglary and possession of burglary tools. The victim in this case told WREG that he is fed up with being a victim and it's time to fight back. According to authorities, they were called out to a shooting after 1:30 a.m. Tuesday morning. When they got there, they found the resident inside the home. He had a revolver. Simeon Pratcher was lying face down on the bedroom floor, uninjured, by the way. Pratcher told officers that he broke into the home through a broken window because he didn't think anybody was there. Victim told officers that he was sitting in his living room when he heard someone come in through the front bedroom window, which had been broken from a previous burglary. So the victim, who's not named because he's a victim of crime, grabbed his revolver, walked into the bedroom. He saw Pratcher standing in the doorway. He said he fired 2 shots because he was in fear of his life. Actually, I correct that the police did not name the victim, but WREG did. I guess he talked to them. Kenneth Dixon is his name. He says his home has been broken into. His belongings have been stolen several times. And he said, you know, he came in through the window, but he knocked some stuff over, and I heard him. He said, I was sitting right here watching a movie on my phone, and when I heard him, I grabbed my gun, which Saturday night I had to go get for my brother, he said. He said, I just popped a couple of shots off, and he told me, meaning the burglar, well, man, he said, they told me nobody live here and said you were dead. Dixon said, I don't know if that's the story or what, but still, it's my house. He said the last time he called police to report a burglary took about an hour for officers to respond. He said, robbery in progress. He said, to me, that should be like an emergency. Should be. But, you know, we do still have a shortfall of police officers in many jurisdictions. And, you know, as the adage goes, when you're in seconds count, help is minutes away, right? Dixon said, I'm done. He said, just stick a fork in me. It's fighting time. He said, I got to fight back. I'm sorry. Y'all can take it any way you want to. After being burglarized repeatedly, he says he's worried about his safety. He's worried about his finances. And he refuses to be a victim any longer. Can't say I blame him. And in this case, sounds like he did the right thing. I would caution him, however, we have seen some examples in Memphis of people who have clearly acted in self-defense, who have been charged with crimes. So I hope that Mr. Dixon doesn't have to deal with this anymore. That burglars in the area have gotten the message that Kenneth Dixon is armed and to leave him alone. But I would just caution him. Make sure that you do have a reasonable fear of a death or great bodily injury before you act in self-defense, because there are some prosecutors there in the Memphis area who would be more than happy to try to put you behind bars for exercising your Second Amendment rights. Finally today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A man in Plainfield Township, Michigan, who is being hailed as a hero after rescuing his neighbor from a home explosion that authorities believe was actually intentional, was a murder-suicide attempt by the woman's husband, who was apparently killed in the blast. His wife hospitalized in critical condition after she was rescued from the burning home by neighbor Tim Johnson and a 17-year-old who lives in the area. Johnson said he heard a loud boom about 4 o'clock in the morning, ran outside, saw his neighbor's home just engulfed in flames. Said he called 911, but he didn't wait for fire crews to arrive. He said he ran to the house. He said he could hear a woman yelling for help from inside the debris. He said she was walking and yelling, "Help me, help me." He said, "I tried to get to her, but the flames kept pushing me back. I kept falling." He said, I knew I had to get her out of there. That's the only thing on my mind. That's when the 17-year-old showed up. The two of them were able to help pull the woman from the flames. Johnson suffered first and second degree burns to his head and his left arms while doing so. Left arm. He said, "I'll be okay." He said, "She's what was important." He said, "I just hope she recovers fully. That's what I'm hoping for." Absolutely. At this point, police believe that natural gas was allegedly leaked into the home's basement, but they're not entirely sure that that was the case. But again, they do believe that this was intentional, although they haven't said what evidence leads them to that conclusion. A neighbor, though, called Johnson a hero, said he literally saved her life, said it took a very charismatic person to do what he did. Well, I don't know that charisma has anything to do with it. Courage, certainly. Fortitude. Absolutely. A willingness to sacrifice your own safety to protect others. All of that displayed by Tim Johnson and that 17-year-old in the right place at the right time. Willing and able to do the right thing to help a neighbor in need there in Plainfield Township, Michigan. And that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program. Mario the Rooster thanks you as well. He just did that a little bit earlier. I think he's wandered off to another part of the yard here. We'll be back on Monday with another edition of Cam and Company. I would encourage you, though, to check out BearingArms.com today, Friday, throughout the weekend. We're going to keep it up to date on all the latest Second Amendment news and information. And there is a lot of news and information coming out. We've got the waning days of the legislative session up in Illinois. Anti-gun activists are pushing really hard to get that Rifle Act to Governor Pritzker's desk. They're going to have to do all kinds of parliamentary tricks to do it. But they were sending busloads of anti-gun activists down to Springfield this week to rally support for that bill, which hasn't really moved out of committee. But they wouldn't be holding a rally for this if they didn't think it was possible to suspend the rules, change the rules, do what you got to do to get this bill to the governor. So we're keeping our eyes on that. We could see decisions from the Third Circuit we talked about with the John Comer for the New Jersey case. It's still out there. We're going to get a decision at some point. I don't know when, but maybe it'll be today. Maybe it'll be tomorrow, and maybe it'll have an impact on the Supreme Court and the hardware cases that are still pending there. We're also looking at litigation elsewhere around the country, legislation in states like California, and then, of course, the cultural attacks on gun ownership and our right to keep and bear arms. All of that covered for you at BearingArms.com. If you like what you see, we'd also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT and take 60% off your membership. No matter what tier of support you choose, you've got some great benefits, and you'll be supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms. And so I want to thank you for that very much. Have a great rest of your Thursday, and we'll see you back here on Monday, not tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.